patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
All right. Welcome to January 23rd. Brand new co-host by my side here on the walk-off. Let's just get this right out of the way. Scott Belford, greatest co-host in the business, is away on his honeymoon slash wedding. I don't know what's going on. He's in Africa for 3 weeks. I also found out today is his birthday, according to Facebook. So happy birthday, Scott. He's really making it getting his money's worth on this trip. So very excited for him. He'll be away for the next 3-4 weeks. In his stay, we have longtime friend of the show. If you've been with following the walk-off for the last year, 2 years, then Craig Ballard is a familiar face to you. You've probably seen him on TikTok if you're one of those youngins on TikTok. Craig Ballard, longtime friend of the show, welcome. How you doing, buddy?
Man, thank you so much. Honest to God, we joke around all the time, we have a great relationship and things like that, but I'm dead serious when I say I'm so honored. I'm so excited to have this, 1% part of the walk-off for the next little while. I'm such a fan of the show. I've been shouting it from the rooftops for a while. If you deep dive Toronto Blue Jay podcasts, I'll just spoiler alert for you, head right to the top, because this is the number one Toronto Blue Jay podcast on the planet right now. So absolutely thrilled to be here. Scott Shoes, if it was yours as well, Adam, I mean, either way, are we being honest? We're talking big shoes to fill, right? We're talking big shoes to fill. But hey, on my end, how I see it is it's going to be a lot more talking Blue Jay baseball for the next little while. That is two thumbs up as far as I'm concerned.
Very good. I love it. Let's get right to it, shall we? Let's grade the offseason, because you may have a different perspective on things than I have, than Scott has. Let's just start with broad strokes. Shapiro, Atkins, how do you grade this front office navigation of the offseason this year? Are you generally happy with it? Are you generally frustrated with it? Where do you stand, Craig? Let's get right into Craig Ballard's opinions, because yep, Everybody's heard mine ad nauseum. Let's get familiar with Craig.
I am ear to ear grinning with the offseason that the Toronto Blue Jays have put together. I think that certain things that needed to be addressed were addressed. I think it's a very pleasant surprise to me. Although we knew Rogers was going to spend at some point, but clearly we're there now. I mean, man, they're into the tax, they're spending money. I really like the veteran a presence that has been brought in. People will think I'm talking about Kiermaier or something like that. I'm talking about Chris Bassett. Talk about Chris Bassett really impresses me between the ears, and every fifth day, yes, but between the ears, you can tell this guy just lives and breathes baseball. My take on Chris Bassett is always, this is a guy that's ready every fifth day. Doesn't just want the ball, he's ready. So the previous 4 days, man, he's put in his work. He is ready to perform and to be a legitimate asset for this team. Best friends of Matt Chapman as well, by the way, for those of you who really want a Matt Chapman re-up. But I've really liked the addressing the outfield defense. I'm going to take this offseason back even to the trade deadline, because when I look at the bottom of this Blue Jay lineup right now, you're likely going to see Varsho in the 7, Whit Merrifield, so there's two new guys in the 8, and another new guy, Kiermaier. That's 7, 8, 9. There has never been a more dynamic bottom of the lineup in Toronto Blue Jay history, especially from what they can do on the base pass. Well, Craig, you haven't been around for the whole... I do hate to tell you, I have. This is an old-timer over here. I do hate to tell you, I have. And there has never been this dynamic, at least potentially, at the bottom of the lineup. Put that sort of base running pressure on the pitcher as the lineup gets turned back over to Springer, Bone, Slim Daddy, Vladdy. I mean, I see so many things that I like here. I think the pitching staff is grinning ear to ear. The defense that has walked in the door, it's not just enough, Adam, to say this is an improved defense. This has become a stellar top freaking tier defense. And again, we can go back to last year, the Whit Merrifield, how versatile he is, and even further to that, Matt Chapman at third base. So I think these guys have really addressed a lot of things that I wanted to see addressed. You and I were talking earlier about the Teo trade. I love bringing in Swanson, but way under the radar, in my opinion anyway, on that trade is the addition of Adam Mackel. So I even feel like going forward, things were addressed, not just addressed for the 2023 Blue Jays, but I even feel like going forward, these guys addressed something And if you talk about Shapiro Atkins, as glowing as I am for Shapiro Atkins, I firmly believe the Blue Jays have never been in better hands than these guys. As you've said many times, Adam, that does not mean that they're batting 1,000. What regime is? And we can point to, they have not drafted and developed outfield talent. So to be able to make trades to bring in a Dalton Varsho, you know, a high upside left-handed hitter, even defensive brilliance, about to enter his prime, controllable. Like that's what this organization has been missing. Shapiro Atkins haven't really been able to do that. So I just think they address a lot of things. I guess I'm on the opposite. If you take what Hey Kami has said and all the vitriol and the vile, if you go to the complete opposite spectrum, that's where you'll find me, Adam. I'm very impressed and pleased with this offseason.
Thrilled with it?
Yes.
I guess let's look at who's out, who's in. We've got, I know there's going to be some smaller pieces around the edges, but generally speaking, the guys we're looking at who have departed, we got Teoscar's out, Gurriel's out. Moreno, not a big contributor last year, but was obviously tied to a bigger role this year. He's out. Ross Stripling is out. Am I missing anybody?
Teo Lourdes, Strip. Boy, I can't think of anywhere that we're missing.
Those are the big ones. I know I'm going to upset some David Phelps fans or something like that. congratulations on retirement there, David Phelps. Yeah. Who we're bringing in, we've got Swanson in the bullpen, Varsho, Kiermaier, Bassett, and Brandon Belt. Who is the incoming piece that you think is going to exceed expectations for people watching Blue Jays games this year?
If you'll allow me to cheat, because again, I want to go back to the trade deadline. Whit Merrifield. I don't think the Toronto Blue Jays fan base is fully have their head wrapped around how good Whit Merrifield is. Think about the Shapiro Atkins era. This is another thing that they've tried, and if we're being honest, have failed on. They've tried, man, Chris Coughlin, Eric Sogard, I mean, Alan Hansen, Kevin Biggio, honestly, and I'm missing a million. There's like 8 or 9 guys in the Shapiro Atkins era that they've tried to have be, you know, their poor man's Whit Merrifield, their poor man's Swiss Army knife. Now they have the actual Whit Merrifield. I think it's a very, very, very big deal. Of the players you actually did mention, remiss of me to not mention them earlier, Adam, because this Brandon Belt signing is intriguing, man. When I talk about that 7-8-9 of our show, that's with Belt in the DH spot. So that's with only playing one of your catchers. So you get that left-handed bat in the lineup with a shorter porch now in right field. This seems like yes, please to me. And we know we love Alejandro Kirk. What's not to love about Alejandro Kirk? Okay, fine. But for having an open, honest conversation, Adam Mack, we saw him regress before our very eyes. That second half last season for Kirk was completely unacceptable. He had a lower OPS in the second half than Raimel Tapia. You know how I feel about Raimel Tapia. Glorious hair, but that's about it. You cannot, and the problem, Adam, is remember, the Jays had him hitting in the 4 spots. His second half was completely unacceptable. Could it have been because of wear and tear? I bet it was because of wear and tear. Now, Belt, a lot less wear and tear on Jansen, who had been injury prone as well, on Jansen and Kirk. So that Belt move, man, it has the opportunity to be the gift that keeps on giving. My number one answer, though, is going to be Whit Merrifield. I just look at what happened. Scott said from day one, I love Santiago Espinal, but my concern is, if you play Espinal, if he becomes an everyday third baseman at the time he was talking about that or second, whatever, as the season goes on, I'm concerned he's going to be exposed. That's what played out. Santiago Espinal was poor in that second half. They benched him in September and let Whit Merrifield go to second base. And what happened? Whit Merrifield caught fire, absolute fire. So my answer here is going to be Whit Merrifield. And oh my God, I'm going to cheat again because I'm just going to give a shout out here real quick, Adam. Zach Pop. I'm really excited about what Zach Pop is going to bring to this bullpen.
Well, there's a lot to dissect there.
Yeah, I cheated. I cheated. I went back to the trade deadline for 2 of the guys.
No. The Whit Merrifield thing is interesting. We'll talk Merrifield, how the second baseman position shakes out. I do want to ask you about Brandon Belt and the workload reduction that you foresee for Alejandro Kirk and Danny Jansen. Do you foresee Brandon Belt being a, for lack of a better term, full-time DH then, like less DH days for a guy like Kirk, so more true days off for Alejandro Kirk.
Really, I think right now, ideally, what I see right here right now is Belt should be in the middle of that lineup, breaking up Slim Daddy Vladdy and Kirk, or Slim Daddy Vladdy and Chapman if Chapman catches fire and deserves to be moved up to that five spot. But Belt right in that four spot, veteran presence. I've got some friends who live down in the Bay Area. Some are big-time San Francisco fans. Some are not baseball fans at all, but they know the vibe of the San Francisco Giant fan. San Francisco Giant fans are screaming bloody murder. They are livid. This guy's a god in that organization, and it's because of how he's contributed to winning. How exciting is that? They can't believe that San Francisco let this guy walk out the door, and it was a one-year contract. That like they can't believe it. I love when I hear things like that because mm-hmm. you know, we're newer to Brandon Belt, right? But here's the fan base entrenched saying, oh, Craig, did you ever get a leader that just walked into your clubhouse? Did you ever get a clutch player that just walked into your clubhouse? Things like that excite me.
You know, I have to say, when I first saw the news about signing Brandon Belt, it felt like a much smaller deal at the time. Like, it felt like his role on the team was going to be a lot smaller than I'm starting to think it's going to be. And hearing things like that from you are definitely, I think this, we haven't had, and this has been a complaint that I've had with the structure of this team for the last two or three seasons, is that we have kind of, I mean, we could have this debate on another time, but it's felt like we've wasted the DH spot as a day off spot. Right. It's an opportunity to get someone a partial rest day. Whereas, you know, you look at other teams and they've got an absolute masher. They've got a Giancarlo Stanton in their DH role. They've got a Nelson
Martinez.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Like, and we haven't had that. And I feel like I'm starting to feel like maybe that's what this Brandon Belt role is going to be, where he might spell, you know, give Vladdy a day off at first here and there. But otherwise, yeah, I'm starting to think he could, be a real contributor out of that DH spot. And I'm excited by that.
Adam, that's a big time point you made as well that I'm remiss. I should have mentioned Slim Daddy Vladdy takes days off kicking and screaming. That is their deal, or what's the word, that is their compromise. Okay. So your days off, you'll be in the DH spot. Cause Slim Daddy Vladdy, he sees if I'm not playing first base, that means it's either Lourdes or Kevin Biggio. I mean, I love Lourdes and Kevin Biggio, but are you kidding me? For our chances to win, it's gotta be me out there. Him sitting down for Brandon Belt, way different story, way okay. different scenario. I think he would do that with bells on. He would be very clear. He would understand, okay, first base is spoken for really well today. And it's only going to be once a week. It's not going to be a big deal for Slim Daddy Vladdy. And I think he himself, he was another guy in the second half last season. He turned into a double play machine. Remember, he couldn't get any launch angle, turned into a double play machine. So this Brandon Belt, from how it knocks everybody down to the amount of at-bats that they have to have, man, I think it's a gift that could keep on giving. It's really interesting when you say, I think that's a lot of Blue Jay fans' journey with Brandon Belt, Adam. I think at first it was like, oh, that came out of nowhere. Okay, well, I guess that could be interesting. Okay, well, that's, you know, but the deeper you dive, man, this guy brings a lot to the table.
This probably isn't the best way to evaluate a trade, but the way you spoke about these San Francisco fans that you're familiar with who are livid at the departure of Brandon Belt, I love hearing that. It was the same with Dalton Varsho. Arizona fans were heartbroken by the departure of Dalton Varsho. Those are the guys I want on my team. Absolutely. All right, let's pivot from here. What's missing on this team moving forward? We just touched on Whit Merrifield's role at second base. You think, sorry to put words in your mouth, he is going to be more or less our full-time second baseman / utility superhero when needed. We had Jeff Blair on the podcast about a week and a half ago, and he was under the impression that another move is to be made, a right-handed outfielder to be brought in. When he spoke with Dalton Varsho on their podcast, the Blair and Barker Show, Dalton Varsho referred to Whit Merrifield as their second baseman. Now, could just be a slip of the tongue, but it is interesting to note that when he's talking about, yeah, we got Vladdy at first, we got Kiermaier in center, we got Whit Merrifield at second. I mean, there's something there, right? Maybe we're reading too much into the tea leaves, but I think there's something there. Jeff Blair thinks Espinal's gone. He thinks there's a trade coming, and Espinal makes the most sense as the piece to be moved. when you look at what's missing on this team, where do you start? What's your priority if there's only one more move to be made this offseason?
Me personally, I think it's completely conceivable that the Blue Jays think this is their team going into the season. And if there is a tinker to be had, it's more trade deadline. You talk about that fourth outfielder. I think that's the obvious place to start. Dalton Varsho, as excited as I am about Dalton Varsho, we would only ever want to have open, honest conversations about Blue Jay baseball. And it is very open and honest to fully admit Dalton Varsho has struggled against lefties. That cupboard is almost bare. He needs to improve there. Kevin Kiermaier, not great against lefties. So I definitely think if you're the Blue Jays, you want a right-handed hitting outfielder that mashes lefties. But my point, I wonder if they see that as Whit Merrifield every now and then spelling these guys, especially if Espinal and Biggio remain on this roster, because now you have second base and you have Whit Merrifield out there. So on the surface, I get the idea that the Blue Jays need another outfielder. I just wonder if they think it's already in-house. Now, Jeff Blair would know much more about it than I would, right? So there's some smoke there. If Jeff Blair's saying it, then there's clearly some smoke there. My point on this, Adam, and it's not a great answer, I admit, but it's honestly how I feel. I will not be surprised if the Blue Jays make another move, and I will not be surprised if this is their team going into spring training and they use the season to evaluate things and then the trade deadline, especially if Santiago Espinal is your guy that's going to be traded. I mean, what would the offers for Santiago? Everybody's second baseman is locked in right now. I would like to see spring training play out. Now a contender second baseman goes down. Well, we've got an all-star second baseman right here that's almost a spare part. You know, let's talk trade. So even if Jeff Blair is right and Espinal is the guy to go, I just don't see it happening anytime soon. That's in the outfield. Infield I love. Catcher I love. If you want to talk fifth starter, we can get into something like that as well, because I think that's something.
We're going to get to that towards the end of the show.
Okay.
I'm with you there. Not super comfortable on the fifth starting pitcher. I don't think any Blue Jays fan is. We'll just put a pin in that for now, and we'll circle back to it towards the end of the show.
Now, what about the bullpen then? Can I talk bullpen now?
We could talk bullpen.
Okay. Because that's another area where I wonder if, because all we hear from the Blue Jay fans is, man, need another flamethrower at the back of the bullpen. Man, need another flamethrower at the back of the bullpen. And, you know, and I rant about this as if that's the only way to get outs. But anyway, let's get back to the subject here. But I think the Blue Jays may think, it's very conceivable to me anyway, and I know Blue Jay fans don't want to hear this because it's the fourth season in a row we're saying, hey, Nate Pearson could be that missing link in the bullpen. I get it, Blue Jay fans. Fourth damn season in a row, I get it. I just don't think it's ever been more applicable than this season. A lot of the injuries with Nate Pearson, Adam, that have been some fluke. Like, in other words, it's not like a shoulder issue that we know is going to reoccur. That was my issue with Michael Conforto, right? The guy's down to one shoulder and he hurt it on the swing. Like, I'd be so scared that could pop up at any given time going forward. Pearson doesn't have injuries like this. He's had a lot of bad luck injuries. So I actually do think it stands to reason that he can be healthy this season. And I think that he could be that missing piece at the back end of that bullpen. Zulueta, they've got a few guys that, again, I'm just going to go back to thinking of the Blue Jays brass. They may be sitting there saying, yeah, Craig, I hear you. Another bullpen arm, I do hear you. But Craig, let me tell you something. We've got the options in-house. Same with the other outfield option. I wonder if they think the option exists in-house. So again, I'm right back to, I won't be surprised if they make a move, but I won't be surprised if they don't, Adam.
Yeah, I'm with you. AAA is maybe stacked is too strong of a word, but
it's getting there.
Significantly deeper than it's been in recent memory.
Yes.
Which is exciting, especially the way bullpens are handled in the MLB these days. AAA is the extension of the bullpen, right? You need to have arms. Guys are coming up and down. Starters don't go as deep, so you're using more relief arms. Having five guys in AAA that I feel comfortable pulling up for any given week, that's a real luxury to have.
Yeah. You know what, Adam? You just described the Tampa Bay Rays. We gush over the Tampa Rays organization. You just described the very Tampa Bay Rays type of thing right there. And I love that.
Okay. Let's move on from there then. Vladdy's contract status, Craig. It's been a topic this off season. Blue Jays on tour, their winter tour. He did mention specifically no contract talks have happened this year, this off season. I'm not necessarily surprised with it. I want to get your thoughts on it. But before we do, I'll just say, I feel like at this point, if a deal hasn't been done, we're going to play this out till the bitter end. That's not to say a deal can't get done. I mean, we just saw the Yankees sign Aaron Judge long-term in the walk year of his deal. I don't necessarily think we're going to go that far. But I don't think there's any chance a deal happens in the near future. Now, we do get a lot of comments, a lot of questions complaining about this front office. And I know you're a believer in the Shapiro-Atkins. So am I. But a lot of frustration from the fan base looking at the year that Vladdy had, right? A quote-unquote down year, right? And like if you finish second in MVP votes, no doubt you're going to have a regression the next year, right? It's almost inevitable. Mm. Still a good year by 99% of players' measurements. Yep. Would love to have the season Vladdy just had, 32 home runs, really great year from Vladdy, let's be honest. But the fans that I'm seeing in the comment section, that I'm seeing on Twitter, that I'm seeing on Instagram, are frustrated that, look, this is the absolute low of Vladdy's career trajectory. I mean, that's the optimistic take. And that this is the time to get a deal done, right? He is at his lowest. This is the most leverage we will have to go in and get a deal done. I tend to think Vladdy's value as a big leaguer is established at this point. It is what it is. Okay. We've seen the potential of what he can be, right? MVP caliber player offensively, literally a gold glove winner at first base now. I don't think anything he does can increase his value. And maybe I'm wrong there, but let's say he hits 63 home runs this year. Is the front office really going to be like, you know what? Yeah, you are worth $450 million because we just saw you hit 63. We know you could do it. I'm already to the point where if Vladdy had a 60 home run season, I wouldn't be surprised at some point in his career, right? So what can he do this season to increase his value, or what can he do to decrease his value? Because for me, the value is set. You know, we need both sides to come together and agree on what that value is. But I think both sides have already made up their mind. I think Vladdy knows what his value is in his head. Shapiro-Atkins know what a realistic value or what their budget for him is. And we just need the two sides to come together. Mm-hmm. But is there anything that can happen in 2023 specifically that can change either side's opinion of this deal?
Wow, that's such a great question. The way you word it could change either side. I don't think can change either side, but can perhaps solidify either side is maybe the way I would put it. If Vlad does get back to being, those video game numbers, because my issue with last season when he didn't even hit 300, and there's just no way in my mind that Slim Daddy Vladdy is a below 300. For me, that was unacceptable. But some of the power numbers and some of the other production's fine. I just think if he has a monster season, it's just going to reconfirm what the Blue Jays already thought, and they would already have that number in mind. I think to your point, a lot of fans think, you know, if he has a monster season, now the Blue Jays will be scrambling to figure. I think the Blue Jays are well aware what an extension for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is going to look like. I think that something coming in play here was how wonky 10, 11, 12, 13 years the deals were this offseason. So if anything, perhaps the Blue Jays are waiting to go ahead and calm that down, because for all we know, the Blue Jays are looking way more along the lines of a five-year team-friendly deal that gets Vlad back on the market as he's going in his prime. Like for all we know, something like that is in play. But yet could anything happen this season that changes anything? I don't think so. Slim Daddy Vladdy could have a monster season, which just reaffirms for the Blue Jays, yeah, this guy is top dollar. Where I firmly disagree with a lot of the Blue Jay fans right now, because I see those comments in that as well, that there's so many of them that are almost acting as if this is news to Shapiro and Atkins. Like they need to be reminded, oh, of course. So by rules, Vlad's not just with us forever. We'll have to re-sign him by contract. Oh my God. No. And even Vlad saying those official conversations haven't happened. That certainly doesn't mean the Blue Jays don't have their game plan, you know, completely intact. You opened by saying, I know you have confidence in Shapiro and Atkins. So this is just another example, Adam, where I have confidence that when it's the right time to do it, Slim Daddy Vladdy will be re-upped with. You know, I've been on the walk-off for upwards of 2 years now saying there is no re-up coming with Bo Bichette. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I will be stunned beyond anything if he is not a Blue Jay for at least a solid decade of his career, if not a Blue Jay period, like period for his entire career. That would really surprise me one way or the other. I don't think that's in the cards at all for him to be elsewhere. And the whole idea of that they have an approach, I think that's Vlad just answering that question. Vlad is, for the fans who think that Vlad would be insulted, you know, be upset by his buddy Teo and Lourdes being traded, be upset by no re-up yet. Slim Danny Vladdy grew up in baseball locker rooms. He is as well-versed as anybody, literally as well-versed as any player in all of baseball when it comes to the business of this sport. So I don't think he'll be taking any of this personally at all. I think Senior will be telling him, you're looking for that 10-year deal. What work did you put in today? What work did you put in yesterday? What's your plan like tomorrow? I think it'll be a baseball family and a baseball mindset to just to go out there and prove it. We saw that, Adam. He moved over to first base kicking and screaming. He wanted to be the third baseman. What's he do? He goes over to first base. He works. You just said gold glove winning first baseman. So I get the drama of it all. It's a dramatic story. Yes, I do. But ultimately, I think it's such a dramatic story because there's some Blue Jay fans, a lot of Blue Jay fans perhaps, who think that Shapiron Atkins might blow this to the point where there is no long-term extension with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And that would absolutely stun me.
I'm with you. I'm not sure I'm with you on Bo Bichette. I do still think that there is a way, an outside track to that, both of these guys staying long-term with the team. I can't see a path in which both of them are gone four seasons from now. In 2027, where we enter 2027 without either of them, I just can't. No. I can't wrap my mind around that. As far as the frustrations that we haven't gotten a deal done, I think that this is a little bit of all the moves that we made this offseason, bringing in Chris Bassett, bringing in Dalton Varsho, like all the additions we made still line up with having money available for Vlad and maybe Bo.
Great call.
When it is absolutely time to re-up. And we've seen deal after deal. We got Springer's contract's going to be coming to a close. All these deals have been built around, we need money available for Bo, for Vlad and potentially Bo and however you view that. But for these kids come the 2026 offseason, there wasn't a single move this off. We didn't sign Carlos Rodon to a big 7-year ugly deal that was going to paint us into a fiscal corner. Everything was about making this team better now, but not handcuffing us. So I love that. And I think what this is doing is this is capitalizing on the fact that, look, we can get these guys for cheap right now. Like, we can have Bo at a team-friendly deal just via the arbitration process, right? Essentially, what is it, $15 million or something like that he just got? That's a team-friendly deal. It's a one-year team-friendly deal. We're getting an absolute discount on a potential MVP for $15 million. And guess what? We're also getting a potential MVP season from Bo at like $5 or $7 million.
Whatever it's going to be.
The arbitrator decides. The alternative is blow our wad on them right now, I guess, and then not have that flexibility. This is, I guess, me toting the company line for Shapiro and Atkins, but this is capitalizing on the value of young players. And I don't necessarily think there's anything wrong with that.
And Adam, I almost think you prefaced it by saying toting the company line, because you can already see that's what some of the comments are going to be. And I just don't agree with it at all. I think it's accurate. I think it's completely accurate. Toting or not, I think it's completely accurate. Absolutely. These guys will have a game plan going forward. I don't think there's any doubt about it. That's a great point you make about, hey, Craig, I don't think it's an accident. The length of these contracts right now, I don't think are an accident. There's a lot of money about to be freed up when it is going to be go time for Vlad and potentially Bo as well. No. I totally agree. The one thing that would end up being a complete failure, as high as I am on the Shapiro and Atkins era, can you imagine if the Vladimir Guerrero Jr. era comes and goes in Toronto and there is no World Series championship? That really would be a failure. So my point being, the Shapiro and Atkins, they need to be monitoring the Toronto Blue Jays. They need to be in charge of the Toronto Blue Jays, not the 2023 Toronto Blue Jays, not just Flan's extent. Like they need to be. That was Shapiro's issue with Alex Anthopoulos. That was the big fight they had the one time they met in September of 2015, I think. The one time they had that big argument apparently in the hallway of their offices there when Shapiro was just saying, man, how could you have made all those you weren't in charge of the 2015 Toronto Blue Jays. You were in charge of the Toronto Blue Jays. Now I've walked into an organization that you've gutted. You've put it all into the – so Shapiro and Atkins, I definitely have confidence in what they're going to do going forward. And that's my bottom line on this. When the time is right for the Vladimir Guerrero extension, that's precisely when it will take place.
Here is an alternate universe for you. There's an alternate universe in which we went the Atlanta route. We offered these guys big long-term contracts fresh off their rookie seasons, right? And I think a lot of Blue Jays fans are still Alex Anthopoulos fans.
That's a good point.
See what he does in Atlanta, and they're frustrated we haven't done the same thing. We are a competitive balance tax team as it stands right now, right? We're over the threshold. In this alternate universe in which we just gave Bo and Vladdy $25 million a year over the next 15 years or whatever the case may be. So in 2023, we're paying them a combined $50 to $60 million as opposed to a combined $20 million. That's an extra $30 million on the books that is no longer available for adding a Chris Bassett, for adding a Brandon Belt. So if that's the team you want, is to have the same team we have today, minus Chris Bassett, minus Brandon Belt, but comfort in knowing that these two kids are locked up long-term. I guess that's the alternate reality. Am I crazy with that? Make it no, connect I, in those dots?
I love that point. I'll take it one step further. You say, well, then there'll be no Bassett. There'll be none of these additions. And the team is what it is. And I'll take it one step further, Adam. That includes the trade deadline then. If you've blown all the money you just told me they've just blown and already are in the that's $30 million on paper added. That's $30 million plus whatever the escalator is from the collective bargaining tax. So it's even more than $30 million. By the way, that's $30 million U.S. dollars. I know fans don't want to hear it, but Blue Jays make money in Canadian dollars. That is part of this equation. That is part of this equation. But absolutely, I'm right there with you on that. It would mean that no additions this offseason, but I tell you, it would also mean no money for any additions at the trade deadline. Blue Jay fans are upset. Can you imagine, Adam, if there was no improvements made at the trade deadline, this fan base will be screaming bloody murder. So that alternative universe you described, it exists, and I'm not happy with it.
I'm not either. Well, let's move on from there, shall we? Let's talk.
Give a quick pause there to give everyone a chance to write that. Oh man, you idiot! Karnak can suck.
I'm sure we'll get those. We'll have to have Joel on later this week to just give us the counterpoint.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have Joel on for sure. Okay, over unders 2023. I want to just look at a couple quick stats here relative to last season. Okay, that's where we're setting the over under at. We don't have to go too rapid fire, but we won't spend too much time on each one. I'm going to throw these out to you. Vladdy home runs, 32 is what he hit last year.
Absolute over. I don't think there's any doubt about it. Absolute over.
What do you think the new dimensions of the outfield wall do for Vladdy? Because I was looking at his, here's what I would say. I was looking at his spray chart from 2023. He hit 11 to the warning track. We're bringing in the field by like even 5 to 18 feet in some areas. I'm just looking at that. And I'm going, that's potentially 11 more home runs just on what he did last year. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a best case scenario. We're not talking line drives that would have hit off the top of the wall. Cause I know there's talk about the wall getting raised, heightened, whatever you're looking at. But generally speaking, do you think that has an impact on him, or do you think?
Well, I think it could definitely have some sort of impact on him. The regardless of the new dimensions at Rogers Center, I think the best thing that could happen for Slim Daddy Vladdy is he just gets that swing back taken care of. That launch angle became non-existent. He became a ground ball machine in the second half of last season. I love when you've talked about what has he done this offseason. He hasn't talked about losing weight or anything like that. He's talking about how much more flexible he's gotten. To me, that makes a lot of sense. I like that. I think that as the season wears on him, that's something that will really help him. Became a little bit stiff, I thought, from an eye test standpoint. So I really liked hearing him say that. The yoga and all the stuff he's been doing in the offseason, I really liked hearing him say that. And on top of anything else, for Bo and Vlad, their approach at the plate has got to be significantly better in 2023. It's the reason for this. Their approach at the plate in 2022 was an absolute nightmare, in particular Bo for those first 5 months. Then he adjusted things in September. How was Bo September? An absolute damn video game out there. He was incredible. So those are the changes I want to see to Slim Daddy Vladdy, that Slim Daddy Vladdy implements more than benefiting from dimension changes. And the good news is, like I said, Vlad said he's put in the work. And that approach, improving that approach, Don Mattingly, you're on the clock. I could see Don Mattingly being helpful with something like this.
Hey, when we talked who's in, who's out at the start of the show, Don Mattingly, yeah. I think, is a understated addition to this team that we're going to quickly remember come April and May, yes. I think.
This is what I say about Don Mattingly, Adam. The amount of times last season, again, the reason for this, the amount of times last season that the Blue Jays were in a spot with men on first and second, nobody out, a 2-0 count. So, my God, first and second, the game situation dictates we're shooting at the right field, we're moving around the runners. 2-0 pitch, I can sit and wait for whatever the hell I want. And the amount of times they took that 2-0 fastball on the outside corner, which is perfect to shoot the right field, perfect, and tried to pull it because they're a home runner bust team and hit the inevitable double play to short. And when those batters came back to the dugout, there were zero, absolutely no consequences for those players. You try to pull that now and come back to the dugout with Don Mattingly sitting there, he's in your ear. He's in your ear. Situational hitting, these are things that Don Mattingly will really improve for the Blue Jays.
I love it. Before we move on from Vladdy, home run derby, all-star game in Seattle. I'm sure you saw the home run derby last season. Ken Griffey Jr., the kid himself, and Vladdy chatting it up. Accounts are Ken Griffey Jr. wants Vladdy in the home run derby in the 2023 All-Star Classic.
Wow.
Would you be... I mean, of course you're going to be excited to watch him in the home run derby. Would you be... How do you feel about that? Because the reasons he's taken it off in the past has been it exhausted him, it messed with his swing. You know, you hear all these things. So if that was a factor in previous seasons, are we thinking the flexibility is enough to offset? Like, is this going to have a positive or negative impact? Or do you think everybody's like worried about that too much?
Mm-hmm. What's funny, because my honest answer would have to put a pin in this and re-examine it closer to the All-Star break because of what you just said. What's the landscape of Slim Daddy Vladdy's season at that point? Because absolutely, as much fun as we would have, we'd have pride, we'd have enjoyment. You know, Vlad would put on a show. There would be so much goodness, yes. But if you're the 2023 Toronto Blue Jays, my God, you've got bigger fish to fry than how somebody does in the home run derby. You are literally considering yourself a World Series contender. So we'd have, for me, Adam, I think we have to put a pin in this and see what the landscape of the league is at that time. Julio Rodriguez, I mean, do Seattle fans wish he, remember, he participated hurt because just he felt that pressure to put on that show for people. I mean, my God, there's no, as much fun as we would have watching Slim Daddy Vladdy in this, there's no way we want to put anything at risk. So let's approach that with caution, Adam, at the very least. I love the idea of it. It'd be fun, but don't we need to mind our P's and Q's here? This team has bigger fish to fry in 2023.
Speaking of pressure to compete in the home run derby, Julio Rodriguez in Seattle. Does he have any chance at not participating after what he did last year? And now it's in Seattle. He has to, right?
He'll be in Teoscar's ear every day. No, Teo, it's got to be you. You should be representing us. No, it's got to be you, Teo. He'll be in Teo's ear every day.
Love it. All right. Very good. And good luck to Teo at the home run derby. All right. Varsho home runs. He hit 27 last year. Does he take another step forward? We are looking at it. Again, we just mentioned it. The outfield wall, that right field with the bullpen jutting into the playing field substantially. Looks like 18 feet they're moving in that outfield wall in the right center field power alley. Varsho, more than 27. Does he get to 30 this year? Or are you expecting a little bit of a regression here? What do you think?
I'm not expecting a regression, Adam, but I am going to take the under simply because, I mean, Arizona ran him out there regardless. We talked earlier about Varsho, his struggles against lefties. Arizona ran him out there, period. He was all they had. I could see him getting a little bit less at bats in Toronto. Okay. One thing you talk about the new dimensions, that should help him for sure. But where I'm really intrigued on Dalton Varsho is where does he hit in the lineup? Because, as I say, they force-fed him in that lineup in Arizona every day. They might as well have had you and I in that lineup hitting in front of him and hitting behind him. He had no protection in front or behind. 2023 Toronto Blue Jays, way different scenario, way different story. Personally, I'd like to see Varsho in that two hole, so we force feed him a lot of fastballs because he kills fastballs. But anyway, we can talk about lineup construction at a different time. But I just don't think he's going to be in a batting order spot, whether it's the two or the seven, where he's going to be looking to hit home runs. And I just don't know if he's going to get the 500-plus at-bats that Arizona had for him. So just from a value standpoint, Adam, I will say below 27. But I hope I'm being clear here. I'm not saying that because it's a regression. I'm saying that because of other factors.
Less playing time. So
a little bit less.
He played 151 games last year for Arizona. That's big time. He had 531 wow. at-bats. By virtue of moving him down in the lineup, that's going to shave some at-bats, some plate appearances off his good season points. Totals. Yep. And like you said, if he is being forced out there against lefties by virtue of not having a better option, that's not going to be a consideration, I suppose, in Toronto. So maybe we shave another 30 games, 20 to 30 games off his season total. Is that too much?
Yeah. Well, I'm thinking 20. I think it could be upwards of 20. Again, this Brandon Belt edition, it creates so many moving parts. Now, one thing I will say in Varsho's favor is I absolutely could see. So you're talking about taking about 20 games out of that outfield spot. Adam, I'd say we add 7 to 10 back in the catcher spot. So maybe overall it's not as big of a draw. Okay. But that's one of the underrated things about Dalton Varsho. As you mentioned earlier, the Blue Jays like to use their DH spot for one of those two catchers there. That's a scary proposition if you're carrying two catchers. If one gets hurt, now the DH has to come in and play. Now you've lost that DH spot. With Dalton Varsho there, you haven't lost anything. So 20 games less in the outfield perhaps, but let's sprinkle in some catcher games. But again, just from the circumstances, it's like if Dalton Varsho has 531 at-bats for the Toronto Blue Jays this season, I'll be stunned. That's what I'm basing it on.
All right. So definitely taking the under on at-bats.
I am taking the under, yes. But again, not because of a regression, right, Adam? Just because of circumstances. Right. Okay. Because I want people to know I'm a Dalton Varsho fan. I'm excited about this guy.
Very good. Very good. Team home runs. So we hit 200 as a team last year. We watched Teoscar leave. We watched Gurriel leave. Brought in Kiermaier, not really known for his power. For our show, we just talked about having a bit of a regression. Not regression, but statistically a regression. Over under 200 home runs for these Blue Jays. When we had Danny Jansen on last week, I posed him this question. I said, I see 6 Blue Jays that can hit 30 this year, right? We got George Springer. You tell me which ones you disagree with, okay? I'm not saying are going to. I'm saying
potential.
Realistically could, okay? We got George Springer, I think, can hit 30. You agree?
Yeah, 1,000%, yes.
Bo Bichette. Career high is 29.
Yeah, the career high is 29. Bo Bichette's power alley is that 18 feet moving in right center field. So absolutely, I'm there with you on Bo, yes.
Vladdy.
Vlad, yes.
That's a given. Yes. Matt Chapman.
What Chappie have last year? 27?
27 last year.
Boy, oh boy, I don't mind that at all. And again, all you said was these guys have the potential. We're not downright predicting it. They have the potential. There's no doubt Matt Chapman has that potential. Yes, absolutely yes.
Okay, number 5 is Dalton Varsho.
Well, we know he's going to have the potential. We know he has the potential for it.
Okay. And then I've got Danny Jansen as my number 6.
Wow. So he loved that part.
He loved that part. Let me put this to you, and I'm going to cheat this a little bit. The catcher position, 30 home runs.
Great point. No, I love that. I love that. Adam, okay, so you've introduced a cheat. I'm going to one-up your cheat as well then. That DH spot with Brandon Belt, 30 home runs.
I love it. I'm taking the over. I'm thinking more home runs this year.
That's way over. That's way over. Yeah. I totally agree. The, again, 32 home runs for what did you say earlier? 95% or something like that. 90, like a huge percentage of the league. Slim Daddy Vladdy's 2022 is, oh my God. Hey, Ma, look at me. Like beyond happy, like career years. Vlad, again, as we said, the launch angle disappeared in the second half. I think Vlad will push into the 40s. Just that alone. I mean, I don't like the badmouth Lourdes. We all love Lourdes. Lourdes had 5 last year. So just Vlad's improvements alone make up for Lourdes, in my opinion. Teo mashes in Seattle. Teo owns that ballpark, so I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the 30s. I don't know if he would have been in the 30s for the Blue Jays, if we're being honest. So I think him and Varshow are close. My point here, Adam, is I think a lot of the Blue Jay fan base think that the Blue Jays have lost a lot of that power, lost a lot of the offense. There's even some who would say, well, it maybe haven't lost, but it's a different offense. That's where I am. I think it's maybe a different offense, but I don't think the regression in power is anywhere close. We're going to see such a reduction in wear and tear on George Springer. Aren't we expecting better numbers from George Springer this season?
Of course.
Aren't we expecting better numbers? Bo had one good month. It's a six-month season. Bo had one good month. I'm expecting more from him. I'm expecting more from Vlad. How many home runs did Alejandro Kirk have? Like, do we even want to look that up? Like, I wouldn't even expect
15 for Alejandro Kirk.
15 in total, and probably like 4, if we're being honest, in the second half. I want to say about 4, like, whatever. That second half was just not acceptable. So I definitely could see the home and over at 200.
Sorry, 14 for Alejandro Kirk. But yes, the for all intents and purposes. Okay, let's move on from there then. Offense is still going to be a dynamic factor in this team, despite seemingly taking a real shift towards prioritizing defense. We could say that. Jordan Romano saves 36 last year.
Man, this is a really, really, really tough one. How do we approach this? I mean, because of the defense and the base running, I think the Blue Jays are going to be in way more games than last year. Like there's going to be way more 4-3 games, where last year it was home run or bust. So they lost 4-0 or they lost 4-1. I can see way. So in other words, way more save opportunities for Romano. My concern with Romano, and you look at his 36 saves, if you take your mind's eye back to last season, of those 36 saves, it feels like he had 32 in the first month. Like it felt like he was in the game left, right, and center. So I just don't see 2023 working out the same way 2022 did from a workload standpoint. I could see Swanson getting a save opportunity every now and then, Yimi Garcia getting a save opportunity every now and then. Again, Blue Jay fans don't want to hear it, but a Nate Pearson. I could see them monitoring Romano a little more than they did last season. I thought he was another one who had a bit of a regression in the second half. But again, not something I can come down on him for, because I've never seen a reliever used like he was last year. Like the first half of the season, he was in every damn game. So 36 is sudden, man. Just from a value standpoint, Adam, I have to say lower than that. And again, this is not because I see some sort of regression coming from Jordan Romano. I just think the way this team is built, there's a lot more depth, and it would not surprise. That was 36 saves with 6 blown saves. So that was 42 save opportunities. I don't know that there's 42 save opportunities for Jordan Romano this season.
Fair enough. All right, last three are all Bo Bichette numbers. Bo Bichette batting average, .290 last year.
You just threw me for a loop there. I wouldn't have even guessed that. What am I thinking on Bo? I wouldn't have guessed that. I thought a lot lower than that. Wow. You just blew my mind on that one.
It was a career low for Bo Bichette, for batting average, for on-base percentage, and for slugging percentage. All three were career lows for him last year. But like you said, when you look at the season totals, mostly on the back of September, you go, well, that was a pretty good year.
Yeah, well, that's the whole contention, right, Adam, with the Blue Jays, with the arbitration right now. Bo's saying, if you look at traditionally, a shortstop in my position that puts up these numbers is a $7.5 million. And the Blue Jays saying, we hear you, Bo. My God, do we hear you. The one thing you're forgetting is you're our guy. We know how you came to those numbers. Your first 5 months, you were a problem, brother. You were an issue the first 5 months. You were not acceptable the first 5 months. This is all on the strength of your last month. So the glass half full is it was the last month. So it's not like he went to something then all of a sudden inexplicably went away from it. I remember Kevin Pillar in 2015. I remember seeing him taking this extra batting practice and he was focusing on shooting it up the middle. I'm like, thank you. Been begging you. You're always pull or bust. And he had a 2-week span where he was the hottest hitter in all of baseball and then inexplicably went back to that. So if Bo can take what he learned in September, and again, I think it's doable, because what improved in September was his approach at the plate. That is something you can take in to this season. And again, pick Don Mattingly's brain as well. I think that could be something that's helpful as well. I don't think there's any numbers that Bo is not going to be better than this season, than last season. So you said batting average 290, I'll go higher than that. The home runs, I have to go higher. Again, with that power alley, the way he shoots at the right field, those are home runs. What was his home runs last year?
24 last year.
Jeez, again, that's higher than I thought it would be. Wow, am I way behind on Bo or something here? Man, I'll still say the over, Adam. I'll still say the over.
Lastly, Bo Bichette errors.
Oh, sorry, no.
I bit my tongue there. Errors,
oh,
23
no.
last year.
Good Lord. Now that you didn't surprise me on that, I would have thought was a high number. My gosh. Okay, I'm going to throw a curveball on this one, Adam. I'm going to say it stays the exact same. How about 23 again? Like, it's going to be in the 20s. It's going to be high. We were told going into last season that watch how Bo's defense improves with Matt Chapman beside. It didn't happen. It didn't happen. All of Bo's issues remained the same. And it's his throws to first that were the problem. It wasn't Matt Chapman's range making the workload less on Bo. That wasn't the issue. It was still Bo's throws over to first base. Watching Matt Chapman throw that ball over to first base is an absolute pleasure. Slim Daddy Vladdy sitting with his glove at his chest, and it's in his chest. It's a pleasure. When, as Blue Jay fans, let's just be open and honest, guys. As Blue Jay fans, that ground ball's to Bo, and he's winding up the throw. You're what the camera follows the ball. You're watching that whole thing because you know who knows what's. And Slim Daddy Vladdy, by the way, is over at first, limbering up because he knows this throw's not about to be at his chest. He's going to have to make some sort of movement. I didn't see improvements on that last year. Marcus Semien worked with Bo every day the year before that, and we still didn't see improvements. So I don't see it, Adam. I'm saying at least the errors will be in the 20s for Bo. I don't see improvements coming to his defense. We haven't seen it.
Well, okay. You were on long toss with us start of January. I ran down the list, the ages of Gold Glove winning shortstops over the last 20 years. There was one
nice.
Under the age of 25. This is Bo Bichette's age 25 season. His fourth season at shortstop. I'm confident that we haven't seen the best of Bo defensively. I'm taking the under.
Okay.
I'm thinking high teens. I'm thinking he's out there a lot. Shortstop is a tough position. It is a high error position for all players across the league, right? I think it's a step forward. I don't think it's a Gold Glove season for Bo Bichette, but I think he is going to greatly improve. I hope
you are right.
I think the September that he had is going to carry on through 2023 offensively. I think that's going to be a massive confidence boost for him defensively as well, because both sides of the field tend to be tied together, right? You're struggling defensively, you're struggling at the plate. It goes hand in hand. So I because I believe that September carries over through the 2023 season, I have to believe that has a positive impact on his defensive stats as well. So, okay, let's move on to there then. Let's start talking pitching. Starting pitcher number five, you touched on it right off the top of the show here. Let's get into it for real. We're looking at two options in-house as the most likely starting pitcher five, at least through April, right? We're looking at Yusei Kikuchi. We're looking at Mitch White. Now, a lot of people have fever dreams over Yusei Kikuchi starting 20% of the games for the Blue Jays at any point in this season. How he had it to his credit, went to the bullpen at the end of last season, looked good in his very small sample size out of the bullpen. I'm hoping that's something to build on. I'm not a Yusei Kikuchi believer, but personally, I hate even saying this. I think he's our best option at starting pitcher five. Mm. Now, I want to hear your thoughts on this. I know a lot of people are believers that Mitch White is going to get that job. I just don't see where that, what that's based on. I'm looking at his numbers, his time with the Dodgers, his time with the Jays last year, his career numbers. Mm-hmm. None of them are tickling my toes. How do you feel
about with the taste of nuts and honey?
How are you feeling about Mitch White, Yusei Kikuchi, and the starting pitcher number five, assuming there's no one else brought in over the next, I guess, 3 months now?
One thing I would say right off the bat is you talk about that 20%. I don't think either one of these guys get 20% of this. I think the Blue Jays are looking to buy time until either Ryu or Tiedemann comes back. I think they're looking at in-house. Again, talk about in-house, because a lot of Blue Jay fans, myself included, you know, Johnny Cueto, there's a lot of guys out there you could have wanted as your number five starter. I feel like the Blue Jays think that their five starter is in-house. And what I'm about to say is not for the faint of heart. And this might light up the comment sections about how stupid I am, but I am asking the Blue Jay fans, because right now so many of them have a period at the end of the sentence. Mitch White sucks and a period. I am asking Blue Jay fans, put that comma and let's wait. Not a period, comma, and let's wait. And I say that, first of all, the eye test, my God, I thought he had horrible luck. You talk about Bo's errors. Bo screwed this guy over a few times. But anyway, I thought Mitch White had some bad luck when it comes to his numbers. But when the Blue Jays acquired Mitch White, Ross Atkins said that they see about two or three tweaks that they think Pete Walker can help him with in the offseason and spring training that would make him their next Ross Stripling. That's the only thing the Blue Jay fan base would agree on, Adam Mack, is that if there was an unsung hero last season, it was Ross Stripling. So what if Atkins is right about that and the next Ross Stripling just walked in the door? Isn't that going to change your mind about Mitch White?
Yeah, and look, I bought into that when we traded for Mitch White, was that, yeah, look what we did with Ross Stripling. I think we, oh man, the way our collective vision of how prospects and young players come into the league is skewed by being spoiled by the likes of Alec Manoah and Bo Bichette and Vladdy Guerrero. But for every Alec Manoah, there is a Nate Pearson. For every Bo Bichette, there is a Jared Kelenic. Mm-hmm. For every Ross Stripling, there are countless Mitch Whites who I heard this. I watched this horror movie before with Yusei Kikuchi. Look, this is a guy with tools and we think we can make some tweaks on. Mm. And all of a sudden he's going to be a sub three ERA guy. Like, we like the potential of one or two assets of his. And if we can just drastically improve three other areas, will be good. I'm it not sold on Mitch.
No, you're White. Right. You're totally in the Chapman Atkins era. Open, honest conversation. That's happened. What about Derek Fisher, that outfielder they brought in? They said, "Man, if we can just harness that power swing he's got, wow!" So guys, we have seen this before. Absolutely yes. All I'm asking, Adam, is to take that period away and put the comma. We may, as it plays out, we may need to go ahead and put the period in this. If this guy sucks and it's not, I'm just not there right now. I'm not ready to move off of it. And again, I think the big thing in Blue Jay land right now is I don't think they're looking for a fifth starter for 2023. I think they're looking for a placeholder until they see what can Ryu be our guy down the stretch. And when is Ricky Tiedemann going to Alec Manoah this situation, which is kicked down the door to them when they brought up Alec Manoah a few years ago? That was never the plan, to have Alec Manoah at the big league level, but he showed in spring training, hey, just so you guys know, I'm major league ready right now. Went down to the minors and said, just so you guys know, I'm major league ready right now. He didn't knock on that major league door. And I could totally see Ricky Tiedemann with this new where did he come out of, the pitching factory, this new thing that the Jays have?
Yeah,
The pitching lab. He'll be the first real successful pitcher to come out of that. And I think that's sooner rather than later. So if it is Kikuchi or White, all I'm saying is I think it's them for a very small period of time. And at the beginning of the season, because of how the off days and everything like that work, you can go a couple of weeks without even needing a fifth starter, by the way. I don't know if the Blue Jays will go that road. I'm just saying that's something you could do. I'm way out on Kikuchi. Maybe that's part of why I don't want people to quit on Mitch White, because I don't want it to be Kikuchi. But as I said, I think they're just biding time to see what Ryu can give them and what Ricky T can give them.
Blue Jays do have a pretty busy April. We have four off days in 5 weeks.
Oh, that's way less than usual. You know what? Maybe I need to get rid, because this is a new schedule now, right? It's not an unbalanced.
So maybe you need to wrap your head
around that a little more there. Good point.
Okay, well, we're on this topic here before we move on to our last topic of the day. I just want to get your thoughts on, does this team start hot out of the gates? What's our April look like? Wins and losses. We have between March 30th, that's the season opener against the Cardinals, and April 30th, we have 28 games. So we play, and you're just going to give you a list of teams, and then I want to know how many wins you think the Blue Jays are getting in April. So we got St. Louis, we got Kansas City Royals, we got the Angels, we got the Tigers, we got the Rays, Astros, Yankees, White Sox, and Mariners.
Jeez, there's some teams in there. Wow, 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 wow. I do think the Blue Jays will have a chance to hit the ground running because of how they're constructed now. In the past, it was a home run or bust, so we needed to wait for that offense to heat up. And traditionally, those Latin players heat up as the summer months come, right? As it gets a lot hotter, That's a lot less the case for the Blue Jays now. They've got that pitching and that defense. That will be their calling card. So I very much think that the Blue Jays can hit this ground running. Again, I'm going to be looking right at Don Mattingly because I don't have a lot of faith in John Schneider. So I'm going to be looking right at Don Mattingly for how this team is prepared between the ears to go into this season. I also think that some things are going to carry over because I bet it is a horrible taste left in this mouth. We as fans are still not over that 9-1 colossal letdown against the Mariners. Imagine the players who went through it. I imagine they can't wait to get there. We saw you talk about Matt Chapman. Honestly, Matt Chapman, you're on the clock right now. We heard that he took over the clubhouse as this season went on last season. He's got to be that leader, letting them know, guys, we need to hit this ground running. Want to make sure we're a playoff team. There's no doubt we should be a World Series contender. And the whole idea in baseball right now is all you need to do is qualify for the postseason. Then it's up for grabs. It's as up for grabs as it's ever been. So you just need to qualify for that postseason. But man, there's a lot. You're talking about the American League East. The American League East is not going to sit around and wait for the Toronto Blue Jays to get their act together. So I think this team will understand that. Mattingly, Chapman, that the leadership on that team will have them ready to go. And pitching and defense, yes, please. Yes, please. I absolutely think the Blue Jays will get off to a good start. The schedule makers haven't done them any favors. You mentioned Tampa in there. You mentioned Houston in there. You mentioned the Yankees in there. Like, you mentioned some top dogs in there right out the St. Louis. You mentioned some top dogs in there right out the gate. But I still think the Blue Jays will do well.
Well, new look Blue Jays, they're going to be looking to set the narrative, I think, early this season. So, like you said, coming out the gates hot, I think pressure on them to do that. Okay, let's end with Jordan Romano. Let's close with the closer.
Hey.
Confidence level in Jordan Romano as a closer for this team. I know the playoffs aren't a given. I know that a deep playoff run obviously isn't a given, but let's just operate with the understanding here that this is a team that can make a deep playoff run. Is Jordan Romano good enough closer to win us a World Series? Is he a guy that can steal us games? Is he a guy that gives you confidence with a 2-1 lead on Houston in a game 6 or a game 7 to clinch a series? Can he go out there and give you 3 outs? Can he go out there and give you 4 or 5 outs if called upon?
I have a lot of faith in Romano, actually, in Jordan Romano. Look at his worst games last season. Came with Tyler Heineman behind the plate or Zach Collin. He was very good with Jansen and Kirk. That's going to be the case this season. So right away, I've got cause for optimism. I love his fastball. I love his slider. What I would love to see from Romano is him get a little more in lockstep with having both be effective. There was times this season where his fastball was untouchable, but his slider, man, he couldn't throw it for strikes. And when he did throw it, it just hung there and it got rocked. There was weeks where his slider was all he was throwing because he had no control of his fastball. So even with that inconsistency, he still put together a very good season. I could see him just getting more and more comfortable. Remember, he was a closer even in his AAA days. Like, this is not a lost art, if that's the way to put it, the closing on him. And mentality-wise, I firmly believe he has the right mentality to be the closer. He wants the ball in the most high-pressure situations. He would love to come into a bases-loaded situation and face Aaron Judge. Like, that's his tough. He would love that. He's not shying away from any of this, so he's not going to be shying away from postseason baseball at all. I do think Jordan Romano is a guy. Now, would I have loved a Liam Hendricks? Like, in other words, could the Blue Jays run on Kenley Jansen? Could I see the Blue Jays being in on another closer? Absolutely, I could, because I think Romano's every bit as effective in that setup spot, in that eight spot, or that nine. I think he's every bit as effective either way. But if he is the closer going into the playoffs, absolutely, yes, I am. I hate that nose ring thing. Go ahead and put in the comments, oh, old man Ballard. I hate that thing. I hate that thing. But in the ninth inning, I've got no problem giving him the baseball. And I think that the bullpen is deep enough this year, Adam, where he won't be asked to do as many four or five out saves this year as he was last year.
My biggest concerns with Jordan Romano comes when he's entering the game with runners on, right? You bring him in for a clean inning. I feel good about it.
That's a good point.
Sometimes he gives up the long ball. I'm interested to see how the outfield dimensions maybe make that worse for him in Toronto. But my biggest concern is we didn't really see any growth over the course of the season. Like, he just kind of struggled coming in with inherited runners all season long. I don't know why he can't not worry about the runner on first when, like, he has a 2-run lead or a 3-run lead and there's a runner on first, and it gives me concerns. I'm interested to see how the new pickoff restrictions affect Jordan Romano, because there are, what is it, a limit of 3 per at bat, right?
I think if you do it the third time, I think you're in trouble. Isn't it 2?
No, I think 3. You get 2, but it's the third one. If you get, like, you can get them out. Like, it's, if you make a pickoff attempt on the third attempt, it's not like it's a balk and it's an instant free base. Like, you could still get them. But if you don't get them, then it's a free base. So I don't know how many third attempts we're going to see this year. It might be.
Is that what you mean from the rule changes? So that means from the rule changes, he won't have his mind on the runner as much, because he, by the rule changes, he can't be as effective as he wants to be anyway.
Or he implodes. I think the rule changes these particular rule changes will have a bigger effect on Jordan Romano than any other pitcher, at least in the Blue Jays organization. Wow. And I think that's why. I think it is either he's out of his head and he goes, you know what? I can't even worry about that. And I just got to pitch. And if that's the case, great. I think that's great for Romano. If, on the other hand, he goes the other way and he's even more worried about it now, right? He's even more worried about his delivery home because, you know, we've talked about how these are going to impact the game, right? And more base stealing. And if that rushes his delivery home because he's worried, he's like, oh, you know, last year this guy was a 40% chance of going. Now he's a 60% chance of going. I really got to, you know, speed up my delivery or whatever the case might be. Like, I don't know. Yeah. It's weird because once the runner gets to second or third, it's like he's settled again almost. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You know how you can do like an intentional walk? You'd be like, we don't want to face this batter. Give him first. I wish we could do that with the base runner. Be like, you know what? Let's just put him on second. Just move him down to second right now. Free base. And we don't have to worry about it. Anyways, that's my thoughts on Jordan Romano. I am interested to see how it plays out. I think based on that, I'm out. I don't want to say I'm out. I'm lukewarm on Jordan Romano as a big-time playoff closer for this team. I'm worried about him coming in with runners on against Houston. Like, I want to see something from him this year. I want to see those steps forward. I want to see him in opportunities to come in, I guess, with runners on, as much as that's going to be an uncomfortable feeling. You got to be uncomfortable to grow, right? So I guess that's my optimism there, is hopefully early in the season, we give him opportunities with inherited runners and he is rising to the occasion and is taking a step forward. But I don't know.
Mind that. You're taking a wait and see approach. I don't mind that. I think that really fascinates me, that he'll be the one pitcher that's affected most of that. That really fascinates me, Adam.
Am I way off base? Am I overthinking that? Or is there some weight?
Interesting. No, I think it's very interesting. As soon as you said that, my mind's eye went, I don't like when he has guys on base either. And his pitching, a rhythm slows to a crawl. So that now introduces another new rule change.
With the pitch clock
be an issue? Mm-hmm. Yes. So I think you're making good points there. Ultimately, I think we combine our answers and we take a let's wait and see. Does this guy have the potential? There's no doubt about it. He showed us. But could there be some sticky wickets here because of the new changes? We're gonna have to play it up. You know what, Adam? That point could even be expanded to Biggio, to so many guys. This is a new season of baseball, man. There's so many guys that we're really gonna have to take a wait and see approach to see how these new rules shake themselves out. Thank you, Rob Manfred.
Well, let's wrap it up there, Craig. Unless you have anything else to add, thank you so much for taking over for Scott today. Thanks for everybody for watching. If you have comments or questions, get them in. I think Scott is going to try and join me for a mailbag tomorrow. We'll see. I might do that solo. Might have Craig come back for that. We'll see. Otherwise, thanks everybody for watching. We'll catch you next week. And Craig, thanks again to you. Scott, enjoy your honeymoon, my friend.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Osborne with a drive. Cheese and cracker shows to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.